Welcome back. It's a Double-Minded Monday, the 24th day of June, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and I say that because will there be war or won't there? Will there be deportations or won't there? Will there be a stock market crash? Well, that one's pretty obvious, along with the fact that will there be a southern invasion? Oh, yeah. And it doesn't look like that one's going to stop, especially if the socialists have anything to say about it, and they certainly do. Which brings us full circle to the story we'll start off with today. Last week, in a pair of tweets, President Trump said that he intended to have ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, begin the process of removing millions of illegal aliens who've not only illicitly and illegally entered the U.S., but actually, in the cases of concern, been given deportation orders by a court. So as the weekend began, the story was that ICE was going to begin raids with court-ordered removals in 10 different, mostly sanctuary cities, starting on Sunday. That would have been yesterday. And as you might have guessed, the Constitution-flaunting mayors of those places squealed like stuck pigs. How dare the president attempt to see that the law is faithfully executed? We sure as hell don't. And I pause here to note that for a while, folks, your host actually wondered, is this a clever ploy, a 3D chess move, to get the traitors to commit themselves and interfere with lawful deportation orders so that Trump can have them arrested too? Well, so much for that hope, because by Sunday it became apparent again that the president seems to pay more attention to nutcase Nancy Pelosi and her socialist entourage than he does to the people that elected him, or even the Constitution that he took an oath to. The Gateway Pundit's headline summarized the whole stinking mess this way, saying over the weekend that the report was Nancy Pelosi called the president requesting that the ICE raids be called off, and he caved. And so on Saturday they wrote, the president walked back his promise, not the first time, probably not the last, and announced that he will be delaying the illegal immigration removal process for 2 weeks at the request of the communists in Congress to see if Congress, this time for sure, are you holding your breath, folks, will work together on a solution to fix the asylum loopholes. The president tweeted, at the request of Democrats, I have delayed the illegal immigration removal process, deportation, for 2 weeks to see if the Democrats and Republicans can flap in unison. Well, he said, get together and work out a solution to the asylum and loophole problems at the southern border. If not, deportations start, unquote. And yeah, folks, this time for sure. Well, that is, if ICE can still find any of them. Kind of makes me wonder if Obama regime holdovers will be given free bus passes to get them somewhere else in the meanwhile. For her part, the occasional cortex has already been tweeting out some tips to those not yet deported illegals on how to stay out of the clutches of ICE and keep on sucking at the public teat and voting for the likes of her. And that's when she's not comparing immigration facilities to Nazi concentration and death camps and refusing invitations from the people in Europe who actually know what was going on to go take a look for herself, because true to form, she's not about to let facts intrude on her delusions. Oh, and if you missed that story, it's a reference to the fact that last week, after her idiotic tweets, but hey, what else is new there, the Auschwitz Museum, at the behest of Polish lawmaker Dominik Tarzynski, actually wrote a letter inviting the occasional cortex, along with MSNBC hack Chris Hayes, to Poland to see for themselves what life was really like in the concentration camps under the Nazi regime, quote, so you can see firsthand how different it is from your immigration processing centers on the U.S. border, unquote. Yeah, folks, this is one sick and willfully ignorant puppy. On next to other bits of double-mindedness on this Monday. In a stunningly frank moment, says the Zero Hedge summary of some interesting stuff, during a Sunday Meet the Press interview focused on President Trump's decision-making concerning the war or not war in Iran, especially last week's Brink moment, which saw Trump draw down readied military forces, he since called it a common-sense move. As you know earlier, he'd said it was disproportionate. But he threw his own national security advisor under the bus, seems to be the big headline, in spectacular fashion. Well, good, say some of us. Why doesn't he fire him? RT, no surprise, seized on the Trump admission for a headline. But I do like Zero Hedge's more objective way of putting it. Though it's not Trump's first tongue-in-cheek denigration of Bolton's notorious warmongering, it's certainly the most brutal and blunt takedown yet, and frankly, they said, just plain enjoyable to watch. When host Chuck Todd asked the president if he was, quote, being pushed into military action against Iran by his advisors, in a question clearly focused towards Bolton, Trump responded, quote, John Bolton is absolutely a hawk. If it was up to him, we'd take on the whole world at one time, okay? Unquote. Now, in fairness, Trump did begin by explaining that, kind of typical of his managerial style, he likes to have opposing opinions on board. He said, quote, I have two groups of people. I have doves and I have hawks, before leading up to that classic line that Zerohead suggests will now be one for the history books. Here it is again.
So, yeah, John Bolton is absolutely a hawk. It's up to him. He'd take on the whole world at one time, okay? But that doesn't matter, because I want both sides.
But he did demonstrate, at least, that when push comes to shove, he was, at least for now, able to avoid being shoved into World War III. And meanwhile, yes, admittedly, Bolton certainly does look like a junkyard pit bull against potential adversaries. Hey, too bad the president doesn't have somebody like that working the southern border. Instead, we have what might be sellouts like this. Acting Homeland Security, sick, Secretary Kevin McAleenan was accused, says a piece from Cassandra Fairbanks via the Gateway Pundit, of putting his own agents in danger by leaking details about that massive Immigrations and Customs Enforcement operation to the media in order to do exactly what seems to have happened. Sabotage it. And I'll admit, folks, that was the first thing I thought. Why would you announce a big operation like that in advance? Multiple outlets, says the piece, are now reporting the sources within the agency believe that McAleenan was behind the leaks about the now-postponed plan to deport approximately 2,000 illegal immigrants from 10 U.S., mostly sanctuary cities. The Washington Examiner's reported they have multiple sources confirming the leak. Quote, I know he's not approved of the operation for months, said one person familiar with those private conversations during a phone call on Saturday night. The president wouldn't leak that. ICE wouldn't leak that. There are only a few people involved in these discussions. The only one who could have shared the details of those operations was Kevin. That's our belief, said a second official, when asked if McAleenan was behind the leak. The secretary, he said, was not supportive from day one. And another official via BuzzFeed said that leaking the locations and details to stop the operation from happening not only harmed op integrity, but also put the safety and well-being of his own officers in jeopardy. According to the Examiner's report, the sources said only a handful of people within the White House, ICE, and DHS knew the exact cities, dates, and times for the, now postponed raids. And one thing's for sure in hindsight, folks, nobody with half a brain would tell Pelosi or any of the other occasional cortexes on the House floor about something like this. Unless, of course, you were playing chess and maybe looking to find a traitor or two in the ranks. Some of the traitors, though, are still really upfront about it. First and foremost, the evil Eric Swalwell of California, rabid anti-constitutionalist and gun banner, who's following up on his threat to take the weapons from Americans by physical force, including nukes if necessary, with an outright call to violence, urging Hispanic voters to take their fight against the duly elected president to the streets. Said the Breitbart story by Hannah Blau, the Democrat alleged presidential candidate, there's a joke for you, spouted a series of falsehoods in a tweet posted on Saturday accusing Trump of breaking up Hispanic families and caging children just for kicks, and he also said that the president was seeking to erase the very existence of the Hispanic population by way of a citizenship question. And here's the tweet, folks, quote, If you're Hispanic, there's nothing that @RealDonaldTrump won't do to break up your family, cage your children, or erase your existence with a weaponized census. And there's nothing we won't do in the streets, courts, and at the ballot box to stop him. Unquote. And some of us would suggest that, at the very least, he got the order there backwards. The real fact-checkers here noted that the accusations made by the scumbag oathbreaker are patently false. Trump is clearly not a racist, despite the waste-stream media's large-scale attempt to characterize him as such. And Swalwell also, and conveniently, fails to note that there's any difference between illegal Hispanic migrants and those who follow the rules. Oh yeah, and all those pictures of children in cages were taken during the Obama regime, too. But there's no shortage of other double-mindedness from over the weekend to report on this Monday. Come heavily armed, says a headline about the People's Republic of Oregon, where a standoff between Republicans and Democrat state senators there escalated over the weekend, with the socialists actually threatening violence. The story has to do with politically correct bogus science and, of course, a whole lot of money to back it up. so-called carbon credit legislation approved en masse by the Democrat supermajority in the legislature, opposed, of course, by those whose businesses and livelihoods would be destroyed, and at least the Republicans in the legislature, outnumbered as they are, they couldn't stop it otherwise, so they came up with a clever plan. A bit reminiscent, by the way, of what the Anti-Federalists did during the Constitutional Convention about 2 1/4 centuries ago. They walked out, so the vote simply couldn't happen. So here first the background from ABC Channel 13 local news. Under the proposed cap and trade bill, Oregon would put an overall limit on greenhouse gas emissions and auction off their pollution allowances for each ton of carbon that industries who don't leave the state plan to emit. The legislation would lower that cap over time to encourage businesses to, leave. The state would also reduce emissions to 45% below 1990 levels by 2035 and 80% below those same levels by 2050. Those opposed to the plan, in addition to saying that it's bogus science and wouldn't accomplish anything productive other than enriching the politically connected, of course, claim that it would exacerbate a growing divide between the liberal urban parts of the state and the rural areas. The plan would increase the cost of fuel, damage small businesses, truckers, and the logging industry. But the problem is, while Oregon Democrats have a rare 18-12 supermajority in the House and Senate, they can't approve the bill without at least 2 Republicans present. And after several days of heated debate between the two sides, 11 members of the GOP mutually agreed to leave and boycott the vote. And on Friday, heading into the weekend, the standoff escalated when the socialist governor of the state, Kate Brown, authorized the state police, Achtung, to track down und arrest und bring back those Republican lawmakers who dared to stall this bit of tyranny by walking out and refusing to vote. Of interest, notes Zero Hedge, pointing out the incredible hypocrisy here, Oregon House Democrats themselves once fled the Capitol a few years back, 2001, for 5 days over a redistricting proposal, not nearly as economically significant, but maybe politically so, which Brown, the very same person at the time, said was, quote, appropriate under the circumstances. Meanwhile, Senator Brian Boquist didn't take too kindly to the threat to use violence to arrest him, telling a reporter that he was prepared for a bloody standoff if the state troopers come to try to get him. After already having warned Brown that, quote, hell is coming to visit you personally if she went forward with the threat. Said the senator, quote, send bachelors and come heavily armed. I'm not going to be a political prisoner in the state of Oregon. It's just that simple, unquote. So far, as of Monday morning, the state hasn't evidently yet, anyway, been willing to kill anybody outright for their carbon money. But the Wall Street Journal reported yesterday that at least the Democrats are now claiming Oregon militias have also threatened violence over that ongoing climate change legislation standoff. Said a text message sent out to senators, quote, the state police superintendent just informed the Senate president of a credible threat from militia groups. Says the piece, unfortunately, there was no actual evidence of that claim provided. Coming to the Capitol tomorrow, which would have been over the weekend, the superintendent strongly recommends that no one come to the Capitol, unquote. Prompting the Oregon State Police to close the building on Saturday, which didn't stop Oregon loggers and truckers and a group called Oregon Push Back from holding a rally at the State House. Unlike the left, no violence from them, but they did point out that so-called HB 2020 would raise the cost of living for a family of 4 in Oregon by a minimum of $600 per year. Meanwhile, the socialists are attempting to fine those 11 principled senators $500 a day until they show back up and cave to political correctness. Arguing that the bill would cripple industries in the state, Republican Senate Leader Herman Bartschiger Jr., speaking by phone from outside the state, said, quote, this bill needs to be referred to the voters due to its profound impact on Oregon's economy. For their part, the socialists say they'll return to the Senate whether or not they have any Republicans in the chamber, prompting this particular outsider to observe, hey, given the idiocy posing as law emerging from Oregon of late, maybe the best thing for everyone would be if the legislature just never was in session. Next, a couple of stories from the who'd have thought they would ever get around to reporting any of this at all department. First one comes via Fox News, and now the Gateway Pundit and others, concerning an interview that former prosecutor and Representative Trey Gowdy gave to Maria Bartiromo on Sunday Morning Futures. Here's one example of what I was just referring to. The crooked FBI didn't just treat Hillary different, like she was above the law, than the way they did Team Trump, who wasn't ever supposed to be allowed to win anyway. They gave them different intelligence briefings to boot. He said, Maria, have you seen the disparate defensive briefings they gave candidate Clinton versus candidate Trump? And has anyone asked the FBI to explain why they took entirely different tracks to those two debriefings? There's a lot left to be seen by you and your viewers. Unquote. And then there's this shocker, courtesy of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, among a whole lot of other sources. Of course, the interesting part here is not that we haven't heard what the story says, it's that the leftist Minneapolis rag is finally going to actually report on it. Even if true to form, they attempt to soft pedal it. The June 22nd headline says, new documents revisit questions about Representative Ilhan Omar's marriage history. And although, says the subheadline here, she has legally corrected the discrepancy, she has declined to say anything about how or why it happened, or just how damning and even politically explosive it all was, but they don't even mention that part. And here you go. This is at least informative and kind of funny. New investigative documents, it says, released by a state agency have given fresh life to lingering questions about the marital history of Representative Ilhan Omar and whether she once married a man, possibly her own brother, to skirt immigration laws. Omar has denied the allegations in the past, dismissing them as, quote, baseless rumors, first raised in an online Somali politics forum and championed by conservative bloggers during her 2016 campaign for the Minnesota House. But she said little then or since about Ahmed Nur Saeed Elmi, the former husband, who swept into her life in 2009 before a separation 2 years later. The question surfaced again this month in a state probe of campaign finance violations showing that Omar filed federal taxes in 2014 and 2015 with her current husband, Ahmed Hirsi, while she was still legally married to but separated from Elmi. And although she's legally corrected that discrepancy, she's declined to say anything about how or why it happened. Unquote. Other sources, not quite so willing to soft pedal what's really going on here, are suggesting that just maybe the Democrats have had enough of the racist, anti-Semite, lying, Sharia-thumping Omar, and have decided maybe she's a liability at this point and she needs to be dumped, thus giving their captive media the green light to finally let some of the story come out. The Hill, says one summary, interviewed activists and officials who confirmed that while they haven't found a candidate to go up against Omar yet, and there shouldn't be any difficulty on that score, folks, they are done with her behavior. And even Fox News reports that the latest announcement came after a, quote, bipartisan condemnation of the Minnesota Communist Democrats' anti-Semitic comments. So I'll close this story off with one more quote from the Minneapolis Star Tribune's admissions. Here we go. These new documents, they say, also detail the Omar campaign's efforts to keep the story of her marriage to Elmi out of the press, arguing that detailed coverage would legitimize the accusations. Now that it's pretty darn obvious that one more time the conspiracy theorists et al. Were right all along, and invade her privacy. And how's that for a heap and helping of hypocrisy? The truth is, says the Gateway Pundit summary, Ilhan Omar knows she's in a bind after breaking all kinds of federal laws for quite a few years. And now that the Minnesota Sharia Tribune is finally reporting the truth, Jack Posobiec summarizes the big stinker this way, quote, there's nothing new about these documents. You sat on this story, he told them, while conservative media broke it. And yes, when it comes to socialists being rejected, there's a bit more good news today, courtesy of the same source. Mr. Forced Vaccinations himself, the outright socialist mayor of New York City and wannabe dictator, Bill de Blasio, appeared in South Carolina before a whopping crowd. That's how the headlines put it anyway, folks. That was even better than expectations, by maybe a dozen people or so. A whole 15 people turned out to hear the man who would be king. And as a former political activist, folks, and yeah, it's been a long time ago now, I can tell you that I had far bigger rallies in my living room for far, far better candidates. So from there, let's start to wrap it up today with one more interesting aside. from a source we've already visited once. This also comes from the interview of the president with Meet the Depressed and MSNBC host Chuck Todd, who asked him what was his biggest regret from his first term as U.S. president. In other words, if he could have one do-over, what would it be? And on this score, folks, your host would have to admit, I think he has a pretty good choice. Quote, I would say if I had one do-over, it would be, I would not have appointed Jeff Sessions to be Attorney General. And asked to confirm that, he said, yeah, that was the biggest mistake. Confirms Christina Layla for TGP, his appointment of Jeff Sessions did prove to be a disaster for his entire first 2 years because the Just Us department got hijacked by the deep state criminals. And after accusing himself like a coward and allowing Rosenstein and Mueller, she notes, to hijack the Department of Just Us for those full 2 years, and it ended in a bloodbath of Trump associates from General Mike Flynn, who was buried in legal fees and forced to sell his home for the witch hunt, to George Papadopoulos, Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, and Carter Page, among others. But as of yet, and I'm sure you're aware of this, not a single major deep state criminal has actually seen the inside of a jail cell, or even an indictment, or even a pre-dawn SWAT raid, come to think of it. The former attorney general then had de Gaulle to say in April, it's time to move past the Mueller probe. Yeah, and your perfidy, too. So give the president credit for a bit of candor, at the very least. Let's follow that up with another one of those stories that the waystream media deliberately lies about on the one hand, while they work hard behind the scenes to bring it about on the other. Like this, from the far-left self-appointed so-called fact-checkers at Snopes. A large-scale killing of white farmers is taking place in South Africa. False, they say. By which maybe they mean, well, not large-scale enough for their liking. But others, who know firsthand what kill the boar really means, would testify otherwise. Case in point, a story from the Daily Caller over the weekend about Mariandra Hunes and her children, who are survivors of the no-it-really-didn't-happen, according to Snopes and the leftist media, vicious dead-of-night attack on her family. Her husband and her children's father is not so lucky. He's dead, killed in their home outside Pretoria, South Africa, in what's come to be called, unless you're with the waste stream anyway, a farm attack. The targeted terrorizing of farmers in a country with a long history of strife over race and land. Mariandra and her husband and their three little girls were asleep when the two armed attackers came. She was 8 months pregnant with a son that her now dead husband would never meet, and she gave birth just 5 days after she buried him. She told the Daily Caller, quote, you hear about these horrific stories and you really hope it never happens to you. And somehow you never expect it to happen to you until it does. And while the South African government denies the problem, and so-called news sites like the BBC and the WAPO race to debunk farm attacks, especially after the President of the United States tweeted about them in August of 2018, and the Snopes story I just referenced came out a month later saying, nah, don't worry your pretty little heads about it, attacks appear to have risen from between 100 and 200 back in 2012 to over 400 in the past year. Which would be called significant, unless, of course, you're talking about the waste stream and the fact that the dead folks are mostly white, so it's obviously not worth reporting truthfully about. And yes, it's hard not to be cynical when you see lying like this on such a massive scale. And meanwhile, as even the leftist liars haven't denied, mostly, the South African communist president and his party have vowed to move forward with a plan to amend their constitution. Well, at least that puts them ahead of American communists, who intend to seize guns without even trying to repeal the Second Amendment. Anyway, their plan would allow the seizure of farmland owned by white Africans in order to do the racist communist thing and give them to people whose color they prefer. Says Mariandra, the government dismisses it. The government denies that it's happening. There's a climate in South Africa in which violence is romanticized. Actively, even up to the state president, said Afriform Deputy CEO Ernst Roetz to the Caller. They're a civil rights group that have been tracking the attacks since the waste stream won't. And he continued concerning the attacks, it's romanticized and it's encouraged. And gee, that sounds a lot like what we're seeing here, doesn't it, with the invasion. The Bible, folks, says that the double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. That evidently goes for nations, too, and news days like this prove the point. May Yahuwah bless you and yours.